This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Richard and Cherie Spencer? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Richard Spencer was born in the 1970s and lived in England. When he was 9 years old, his mother died of cancer. In the year 2000, Richard met a 22-year-old woman named Cherie. They started living together. At one point, they lived in London. In 2009, they traveled to Thailand and married. Richard had a good job where he earned six figures. Cherie worked for His Majesty's Prison and Probation Service. She was a project manager involved with strategy and performance. Eventually, the couple ended up in Budworth, about a half mile south of York. They lived in a seven-bedroom house. The couple had a daughter in 2015 and would go on to have two more daughters. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. Richard talked about his experiences with his wife, Cherie, in a documentary titled My Wife, My Abuser, The Secret Footage. This documentary aired on Britain's Channel 5. According to Richard and others featured in the documentary, here's what happened during his time with Cherie. In the beginning of their relationship, Cherie was pleasant 95% of the time. However, eventually she became violent. Cherie consumed a lot of alcohol. Sometimes she had 3 bottles of wine a day. Before finally using IVF, the couple tried to have children for a while without success. Hoping to increase her odds of becoming pregnant, Cherie started asking for more sex. Richard found the sex to be absent of love, and he started dreading the activity. As a way of insulting him, his wife accused him of not being a man and would remind him that he failed to impregnate her. During an incident in April 2020, Cherie struck Richard in his ear with a wine bottle. Later, he complained to her that his ear was really hurting. She ordered him to stop talking about it and punched him in that same ear. Richard was in a lot of pain and begged her to stop. At this point, she kicked him in his ear, causing even more agony. Cherie threatened to break a mirror in the bathroom, cut herself with the glass, and falsely accused Richard of attacking her. A restraining order against him would be next, and he would no longer be part of the family. In an effort to prove that she was serious, Cherie even went to a window and yelled statements like, "Richard, stop hitting me," so the neighbors could overhear. Cherie claimed that she was smarter than Richard, and he could never win against her. During another incident, Richard was seated on the floor of the couple's bedroom. He would have normally sat on the bed, but his wife would not let him, insisting that she had paid for the bed, so it was hers. She went into the bathroom for a moment and came out. At this point, Cherie defecated on Richard's head and said, "Clean my blank up." At another time, Cherie produced a knife and held it to Richard's throat. In addition to these incidents, Cherie had mistreated Richard many other times. A few examples: Cherie cracked eggs on Richard's head and pushed them into his face. Cherie insulted Richard, saying, "You're a little blank," told him everyone was sick of him, and claimed he didn't have the blank common sense to do anything artistic or creative. Cherie told one of her daughters that Richard was a horrible, horrible little man, and they would get rid of him soon. One time, Cherie instructed one of her daughters to tell the neighbors that Daddy's a nasty man. There were several occasions where Cherie slapped, punched, and kicked Richard. He often cowered and tried to protect his face with his hands. According to a neighbor, Cherie urinated on the seat of the Spencer family car and damaged the car tires with a knife. In his house, Richard had cameras in a bedroom and in a playroom. These cameras captured Cherie mistreating Richard over the course of years. In addition, Richard recorded using his cell phone and took photographs of injuries he sustained from Cherie attacking him. In total, Richard had accumulated 36 video clips, 9 cell phone recordings, and 43 photographs of his injuries. After sharing some of the videos with a friend, his friend went to the police without Richard's permission and showed them the videos. In June 2021, Cherie was arrested and unwisely decided to talk to the police. Here's what she told them. Cherie claimed that Richard had consumed alcohol, was unsupportive as a husband, and dragged her by the hair. She acknowledged being a perpetrator some of the time, but argued that she was a victim too, as if the offending was mutual and balanced. To explain the bite marks on Richard's body featured in the photographs, Cherie said those were sexual in nature. When asked if she could produce photos of her injuries, just like Richard did for his, Cherie claimed that she deleted them from her phone. The police confronted Cherie with a video of her threatening Richard with a knife, but accidentally played the video with the sound off. As it turns out, this worked in the favor of the police. When Cherie watched the video without the sound, she explained how she had the knife because she wanted to give it to Richard. He had threatened to kill her, so she was going to hand him the knife and invite him to follow through with his threat. When the video was played with the sound on, Cherie could be heard warning Richard. At one point, when she was referring to her behavior, she stated, "Shame, it takes that level of violence." The audio proved that Cherie had just lied to the police.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get 6,000 cash, give us each 3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Something is creeping in. Don't follow it down.
Let me introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorized financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy. And you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
It was all fictitious.
You stole from my son who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt K-L-O-O-G-H-L-E-S-S.
Cherie was taken to jail, but was eventually released on bond. As she was awaiting trial, she repeatedly claimed that she was a victim. Despite this, in February 2023, 45-year-old Cherie Spencer pleaded guilty to 3 counts of assault occasioning actual bodily harm. This was for physical violence that occurred in January and April of 2020. Cherie also pleaded guilty to coercive and controlling behavior in an intimate or family relationship. This was for her behavior between January 2016 and June 2021. She was sentenced to 4 years in prison, but will be eligible for parole in just 2 years, meaning she could be out as early as February 2025. Richard moved on with his life and found a new partner. He lives in Yorkshire. He acknowledged that he was manipulated by Cherie. She had managed to convince him that he was responsible for what happened. Her argument was that the mistreatment was justifiable because Richard disappointed her. She isolated him and controlled him in many ways. For example, she told him which bathroom he could use and what bedroom he could sleep in. Despite all this, Richard Spencer indicated that he has no anger or ill will towards Cherie. Now moving to my analysis. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. In the beginning of the marriage between Richard and Cherie, Richard found his wife to be kind, thoughtful and caring, but also in possession of a dark side. When she started mistreating him, he was alarmed, but thought things would get better. After they had children, he was thinking that Cherie would improve. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Rather, her behavior only became more worrisome. After Richard lost his mother at a young age, he felt pressure to contain his emotions. When Cherie provoked him, he would not become angry in response. In an effort to minimize complaints and frame her behavior as appropriate, Cherie would tell Richard that it was normal for couples to argue. Her plan was to make him feel overly sensitive and petty, like he was whining about every little thing. One key concern that Richard had was based on Cherie's threat that she would accuse him of harming her. Richard recognized that he was physically larger and stronger than Cherie. He knew that this would not weigh in his favor with the police. Cherie was exploiting the inherent bias of the criminal justice system as far as how domestic violence is viewed. More often than not, men are the perpetrators. Therefore, the police tend to be more suspicious of men. Richard decided to cope with the mistreatment instead of going to the police. When he knew that a physical attack was imminent, he would change his shirt to something that would hold up better under attack, like a shirt without buttons. He used makeup to cover bruises on his face so he could drop his daughters off at school without attracting negative attention. On occasion, Richard restrained Cherie after she attacked him, but this only made her 10 times angrier. Most of the time, Richard simply tried to protect himself when Cherie was violent. For example, he would curl up into a ball. Richard still held out hope that the mistreatment would simply stop. That's all he wanted. He wasn't interested in revenge. He wasn't interested in damaging his wife's reputation. He simply wanted to live in a house where he was not a punching bag. As he was struggling with the physical and verbal harm, Richard was doubting himself and his potential role in what was happening. This is because Cherie was constantly telling him that it was his fault. She was gaslighting him, saying that he was actually causing their arguments. Cherie's manipulation tactics against Richard were so effective that on a few occasions, he considered deleting the videos that he had accumulated. If Richard's daughters had not witnessed what was happening to him, he never would have spoken to anyone about what Cherie was doing. He valued his marriage and his family and was willing to suffer if necessary. Cherie, of course, did act out in front of their daughters, and Richard did feel compelled to share his experiences with a friend. This ultimately led to Cherie's arrest and conviction. Being separated from Cherie may have caused mixed emotions for Richard, like he was ambivalent. In one sense, he was losing someone that he loved. In another sense, there was a tremendous weight off his shoulders. Now the situation was no longer in his control. It was up to the criminal justice system to deal with Cherie. Her manipulation tactics may have worked on Richard, but they would not work on the police. As far as Cherie, her behavior is consistent with someone who is self-centered, arrogant, condescending, vindictive, deceptive, and who had a sense of entitlement. Alcohol was a major part of Cherie's life. It only made her behavior worse. Alcohol consumption preceded many, if not all, of the attacks against Richard. Cherie would become aggressive and vicious when intoxicated. For some reason, Richard was the target and not her daughters. Perhaps there was some deep-seated anger toward him that was unlocked by the alcohol. One remarkable element of Cherie's behavior is how she refused to change. When she was not drinking, she would have known about the violence she perpetrated when she was intoxicated. Despite knowing this, she would drink again and risk becoming violent. There's the sense that Cherie really didn't care about the consequences. She wanted to drink no matter what. Nothing was going to stop her. Cherie just happened to be with a partner who was non-confrontational, peace-loving, and highly vulnerable to manipulation. This allowed Cherie to get away with her crimes for a long time. She may not have been pleased with Richard as a husband, but she probably was pleased with him as a victim. There may have been this feeling for Cherie that she was invincible. She could do anything that she wanted without consequences. Ultimately, however, Cherie simply pushed Richard too far. Everyone has a limit. Now moving to my final thoughts. Richard had faith that his wife would change and believed her when she accused him of being the problem in the marriage. This kept him trapped in a vicious cycle. Cherie had faith that Richard would never stand up to her in any meaningful way. Her reign of terror would never end. Both were wrong in their assumptions, and both learned about their incorrectness the hard way. It's not all bad news for Cherie. Her job in the prison system was to discover the impact of incarceration on families. Now she can conduct firsthand research through her magical prison journey.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Twenty-four hours ago, I found out the person that I'd been dating and seeing for the last 6 months as a con man.
That is my sister Emma. Andrew Tonks's lies had been so convincing, she'd invested $300,000 with him. However, the tables were about to turn on Andrew. What he didn't know was that Emma had discovered his real identity. But to get any chance of justice, Emma had to act like it was business as usual. Coming up in this series...
And that's when murder, all this stuff goes through my mind. I'm really, really scared.
I'm assuming Sarah has watched too much Netflix and figures I've been defrauding you. Couldn't be further from the truth.
That's what this was, a real-life story that seems so unbelievable, but it was actually true.
A true story that all starts with one simple swipe to the right. I'm Sarah Ferris.
And I'm Emma Ferris, and this is my story, Conning the Con.